Advent. It's a season of anticipation. Specifically, it's a time when we anticipate the birth of Jesus. But anticipation also involves waiting. It means the thing we are excited for, anxious for, hoping for, has not yet arrived. And if we're honest, waiting can be hard. But time and time again in the Bible, we see God using waiting. As it turns out, waiting can grow patience, waiting can create perseverance, and waiting is essential in developing faith. So this Advent season, let's open our hearts and set our minds to explore some of the mysterious and wonderful ways God has, can, and will transform His people through waiting.
Yeah. It's great to see you today. If we haven't met, my name is Dave. If we have, it's good to see you again. You know, one of the things we see in the scriptures time and time again are the stories of people that God calls to follow Him and serve Him and trust Him. And in nearly every case, following involves waiting. Waiting for help, waiting for healing, waiting for direction, waiting for understanding or guidance or assistance. And in the story we'll look at today, the story of Abram and Sarai, God uses waiting for their maturing. God, He comes to them and He makes some promises. He calls them to action. But then He asks this couple to wait. In fact, the New Testament, looking back at this story, says this in Romans chapter 4. Their faith was strengthened through waiting. Their faith was strengthened through waiting. And I was thinking this week about Abram and Sarai as I read this story again. And I was kind of pondering how not a lot of people would want their story, but we would all want their faith. Friends, you don't get their faith without their story. You see, some of you in here today, you have just been through a story. Or maybe you're here and you're in the middle of a story. Or maybe you're here and you don't even know it yet, but there's a story coming your way and it's just around the corner. And if that's you, this is what I hope you'll hear today. Hang on, because God has, is, and will use your story to grow your faith. See, the question we're asking this morning and kind of throughout this series in Advent is, what does waiting look like? What does it involve? Why is it so hard? And how does God help us in our seasons of waiting? So let's get to it. Let's dive in. Genesis chapter 11, verse 31 is where this story starts. It says, Terah took his son Abram, his grandson Lot, son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, the wife of his son Abram, and together they set out from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they settled there. Terah lived 205 years and he died in Haran. The Lord had said to Abram, go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation and I will bless you. I will make your name great and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. So Abram went as the Lord had told him and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. Now, as we get into this, to really understand what is happening in this story, we need to notice where Abram and Sarai are living when this story begins. And right away we're told in verse 31, the Bible gives us details for a reason. It says this, it says, they set out from Ur of the Chaldeans. Ur of the Chaldeans is where they're living. You can see it here on the map. And this is an important detail. The original readers of Scripture would have understood what was being communicated here because, believe it or not, in 2000 BC, Ur was the place to be. All the trading around the Mediterranean would pass through Ur. And so it had become this city of great wealth and trading and technology and learning. Let me put it this way for you. People moved to Ur because they wanted their kids in the Ur school district. All the cutting edge, high paying tech jobs were located in Ur. If you wanted culture, comfort, advancement, safety, and security, you moved to Ur. Ur was not the place you moved from, it was the place you moved to. And you think I'm exaggerating, but I'm being completely serious. Archaeologists actually tell us that the very first written down legal code in the history of the world came from the city of Ur. That's how advanced this place was for its time. And so God comes to Abram and he says, I've got something great for you. I've got something special for you. I've got a wonderful plan for your life. But before you experience it, before it's realized, there is going to need to be sacrifice. You will have to leave. You will have to surrender. You will have to give up. And you will have to wait. You see, God promises Abram something amazing in this story. He says to Sarai, I've got something extremely special for you, but not right away. This is not an instant cash offer. This is an offer to journey and trust and wait with God for something amazing. And it begins with a call to sacrifice. Let me ask you today, is there a place in your life right now where God is leading you into sacrifice, calling you into sacrifice, asking you to give something up in order to embrace something better, to lay down something that feels good, something that feels safe, something that feels normal or comfortable in order to move towards something with God that might be remarkable? See, friends, here's the thing about following God. I love Christmas carols. Were the songs this morning so rich and deep, and yet you have to really read the words. If you just sort of sing the words and let the melody create this nostalgic, peaceful, snow is falling and everything is great in my life kind of atmosphere, you miss the whole point. Read the words. Read what it's about. It's about something deep and passionate and hard and difficult and life transforming. Following God, friends, involves waiting, and waiting involves sacrifice. Chapter 12 says, the Lord had said to Abram, leave your country, your people, and your father's household. He's being asked to give up a lot here and go to the land, what? I will show you. Notice the tense there. It's not present tense. It's not past tense. It's future tense. Now, Abraham knows here that God is leading him to Canaan, but Canaan is not a specific location. You can see it there on the map again. Canaan is more like a region. And it wasn't a real great region either, by the way. It's like the opposite of her. Uncultured, uncool, cutting edge. It's a region you did not want to move towards. And God says to Abram, I just want you to kind of head for this area. In other words, there's not a whole lot of certainty in this moment. It lacks specifics. It lacks details. And yet, waiting and following God in the midst of uncertainty is precisely how Abram will grow into a person of resilient faith. Waiting and following God in the midst of uncertainty is precisely how you will grow into a person of resilient faith. Listen to this from Hebrews chapter 11. We read, by faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. Even though he did not know where this path would lead, even though he did not know where this road would end, he went. And think of how many things could possibly go wrong. Think of all the details not pinned down. Imagine moving your family hundreds of miles away and not knowing where you would land. The lack of certainty in this situation is astounding. Andy Stanley writes to next generation leaders, leaders in the church, leaders of God's people, and he says this. He says, there will always be an element of uncertainty. You want to lead for God? You want to walk with God? You want to follow God in this world? There will always be an element of uncertainty. He goes on, generally speaking, you are probably never going to be more than 80% certain, but waiting for greater certainty may cause you to miss an opportunity. God never promises that it will be easy, that it will be smooth. The only thing Abram knows is God has called him, God is leading him, and God has made a promise to use his life. Friends, how many of us are held back from walking with God in this world simply because of uncertainty? Because we can't see the plan, because we don't know the ending, because we want to understand up front where things are going and exactly how it will turn out. God, I'll do it, I'll go, if you'll just tell me how it's gonna go. You know, one of the main reasons I'm at Cedar Mill Bible Church is because I learned this lesson the hard way. I was serving as an associate pastor in California. My wife and I had been there a number of years. I was sensing this call to be a lead teaching pastor. And then I got a call. I got an offer to go and pastor a church just north of Denver in Colorado. And we thought about it and we prayed about it a bunch. And if I'm honest, I sensed and I felt and I believed that God was asking me to go. But it felt risky to me. There were a lot of unknowns. I had a lot of insecurities. The situation did not feel like guaranteed success. And I was very comfortable where I was. So I turned it down. I said, no, I opted for worldly safety instead of godly loyalty. And I have to tell you, after that happened, for a moment, for a short season, I felt relief. It felt so good just to be where I was and not have to change and not have to trust and not have to go through all the hassle and faith and torture of a move. And yet, soon after, weeks later, maybe even just days, my relief shifted to depression. I felt terrible. I felt down. I felt low. I felt awful. And I spent a lot of time over the next number of months struggling with the Lord with the question, why couldn't I do it? Why? I preach about trust and faith and following you, God. Why could I not trust and have faith and follow you, God? Why couldn't I do it? Why did I let fear and doubt and uncertainty have more control in my life than you? And as a result of that experience, I vowed to myself that if God ever gave me another opportunity to trust him, I would do it. If he ever called me again to go, I would go, no matter what. And friends, years later, that call did come, and it was a call to hear. Pastor, I wasn't looking for applause on that, but thank you. That's gracious. Very nice. Pastor Irwin McManus, in his book, The Barbarian Way, says this. By the way, don't you love that title? The Barbarian Way. That's his way of talking about the Christian life, right? And you're like, I've never thought of it that way. Listen to what he says. The future is uncertain, but we need to move toward it with confidence. There's a future to be created, a humanity to be liberated. We need to stop wasting our time and stop being afraid of what we cannot see and do not know. We need to move forward full of force because of what we do know. What has bigger sway in your life these days? Fear, doubt, uncertainty of what might happen, or God's calling? And his promise to be with you in the uncertainty, with you on the journey, and with you even in the waiting. Now, a big part of this story, the story of Abram and Sarai, is the promise that God makes to them in verses 2 and 3. I'll read it for you again. He says, Abram, I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. God is saying here that through Abraham's family and his family line, he's going to establish a people. And through that people, God is going to bless all people, the entire planet. And there is so much packed into this promise. But I'll tell you what's also in this promise. A problem. If we go backwards to one verse before where we started today, we read this. And this is the verse that launches the entire narrative. You ready for it? Now Sarai was childless because she was not able to conceive. Friends, embedded in that one sentence is a lifetime of waiting in pain. And some of you in this room, you understand that pain. Some of you here this morning understand that the hardest place God calls us to wait is often the place where we most hurt. You see, God comes to Abram and Sarai right in the midst of their deepest pain, right in the place of their greatest vulnerability. And he says, trust me here. Have faith in me here. Wait with me right in the middle of your biggest fear and greatest grief and most tender insecurity. That's where you should trust me, because that's where I'll be most faithful. Friends, the point I want to make here is that waiting is the hardest where our pain is the greatest. And our question for God in the midst of our hurting pain is often, how long? How long will I have to wait? How long will this go on? Maybe you've said this, or you've cried out to God with David from the Psalms. How long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? How long, God, will this go on? You see, if I only knew how long I'd have to wait, then I think I could be faithful. I think I could do it. I think I could make it. I think I could persevere. You know who has this figured out? Disneyland. Disneyland knows about this truth. This is why they put signs up in the lines that say things like, from this point forward, it will be another 6 weeks before you can ride Pirates of the Caribbean. 3 hours from here until you're actually sitting on Indiana Jones. I mean, Disneyland understands that knowing how long you have to wait, even if the news is bad, helps you in the waiting process. And don't we wish God were more like Disneyland? You never thought you'd hear that in church, did you? Yeah, don't we wish that life had signs like 8 months till you find your spouse, right? One more year of your kids' rebellion, hang in there. A successful pregnancy just around the corner. Counseling will help you in your marriage in 2 years. Only 3 more months of unemployment. Your grief, it will lessen at some point. Remission ahead, right after this next round of chemo. Depression medication will take effect with just 2 more adjustments. You see, the real problem with waiting is that we don't know when it will be over. And in that, we often wonder, will God be faithful? Will he really come through for us? Let me just pause for a second right here and ask you this. Are you waiting on anything right now? Are you waiting right now? Are you struggling with when, with how long, with will things ever get better? If you are not alone. When we jump ahead in this story to chapter 15, we find that Abram and Sarai are still waiting. See, for us, this is just a short story, just a few flips of the pages. But Abram will wait 25 years for a son. Sarai will wait in her pain for 9,125 days, 9,125 mornings of waking up and realizing again, it still hasn't happened for me. And in the midst of that waiting, I'm sure there were doubts and questions and a lot of conversations with God. And we get one here in verses 2 and 3. Abram says, "Sovereign Lord." I love how he calls him Sovereign Lord. I think that's an acknowledgement, but maybe even in this moment, a little bit of an indictment. God, I know who you are. I know how big you are and strong you are and how powerful you are. Why haven't you done it? Why haven't you acted? Why haven't you intervened to help us? Sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless and the one who will inherit my estate is Eliezer of Damascus? You have given me no children, so a servant in my household will be my heir. See, the question of this story is not just, will Abram and Sarai trust, but is God trustworthy? Is God the kind of God we should put our trust in, even when the evidence and the facts and the situation we are facing seem to say that he's not coming through and that there really is no way? And I love God's response to Abram. I love how he reassures him here. He walks him outside and essentially puts his arm around Abram's shoulders and says, "Look up at the sky and count the stars, if indeed you can count them. So shall your offspring be." You know how doubt and insecurities and fears and worries so often emerge most prevalently at night? Is this a reality for you or just for me? Have you experienced nighttime worry? How there's something about 3 a.m. that just makes all of life's challenges and difficulties seem bigger and more ominous. At 3 a.m., they're just huge. And I wonder, friends, I wonder if this isn't why God doesn't root his promise to Abraham in the stars. So that on those nights when he can't sleep and his mind is spinning and the doubts start to flow, he can just look up and remember that his God made a promise, that his God has a plan, and that his God is still there and has not forgotten him. Just look up, Abram, he says, in the middle of the night. Because if there's one thing the story of Abram and Sarai wants us to see, I think it's this. Waiting and trusting in the midst of pain is where God does some of his best work. And at the end of this chapter, God and Abraham go through this ceremony together to form what's called a covenant. It's this moment where they formalize their relationship. They come to this very personal and committed agreement with one another. And in this covenant, God asks Abram to bring some animals and then cut them in half and then arrange the halves of the animals opposite of one another. And this, again, we talked about it, but it seems really weird, and I'm tempted to think, can't you just shake on it? I mean, can't we just do like a document or a pinky promise or something else? But this is what they do in the ancient world. When two parties made an agreement, they would act out the consequences of breaking that agreement, of breaking your vows or of not following through. And this was actually called something. It was called the curse of the covenant. They would act out the curse of the covenant. And so what would happen is that after the animals were cut in half, both parties would walk between the animals as a way of saying, if I do not do everything I've promised to do in this relationship, then may I be as these animals. May I be cut to pieces. May my body be broken. May my blood be shed, because covenants were very serious relationships. Now, one other thing to know is this. If a king was making a covenant with one of his subjects, with someone lower than him or beneath him, the king would never walk through the pieces, only the subject. Because if you were in a covenant with a king, and you were the subject, only you would have to pay the price if the covenant was broken. The king would never pay a price, even if he was the one who broke his promise. But listen, friends, listen to what we read next. This is Genesis 15, 17, and 18. When the sun had set and darkness had fallen, a smoking fire pot with a blazing torch appeared and passed between the pieces. On that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram. When you read this story, what you'll notice is that Abram never walks through the pieces. He never walks through the curse of the covenant. The only one who passes through is God himself. This is a covenant, friends, like no one has ever seen. Because the God of the universe, the King of all kings, says to Abram, if I break my promise, if I don't live up to my end of this covenant, then may I be like these animals. But also, Abram, if you don't live up to your end of this covenant, and if you aren't faithful to me, then in that case, I will also be the one who pays the price. It'll be me who gives my life for your failure. God is saying here, do you know why you can trust me, Abram? Do you know why you can believe in me when the waiting is long and all the evidence around you seems to be saying that you can't? It's because I'm a God who has put everything on the line for you. It's because even when you aren't faithful, I will be faithful. And friends, this is where the story of Abram intersects with the story of Advent. You see, Advent is the season when we wait for the one who will come as the ultimate covenant keeper, the one who will give his body for our sin and shed his blood for our failure and lay down his life so the covenant between us and God can be kept now and forever. Rich Velotis says it this way in a tweet, and I don't often like to quote tweets, but this one is so, so good. Are you ready for it? The good news of Advent is not that we are faithful in our waiting, but that God is faithful in his coming. And so the question today is, do you know, and are you walking with, and are you trusting in a God who will be faithful to you in all the painful waiting of this world? Are you walking with a God who will walk with you, who will be faithful to you, who will never leave your side, no matter what, through your ups and downs and ins and outs? Do you know that God, and are you walking with that God? Do you need that God today? Do you need to declare that you need that God again today? If so, Jesus says, when you gather, remember my faithfulness through this meal. Remember the new covenant in my blood, which is poured out for you, the covenant fulfilled and the covenant promised. Remember that you can now walk with him, not based on your faithfulness to him, but on his faithfulness to you. Friends, do you need the God of the universe to help you in your waiting? You're waiting in this life. You're waiting in this season. You're waiting in through all the hurts and pains and grief that this planet throws our way. If you need that God, he's available to you today. He wants to come alongside you again today, and he wants to remind you of his faithfulness through this meal. And so if today you want to join hands with the God of the universe again, to walk through whatever it is you're walking through, I invite you to the table to receive the elements, to come and remember that his body was broken and that his blood was shed and that your sins are forgiven and that you are now empowered to live as a people of hope and peace and patience and victory no matter what life throws your way. See, this meal is about forgiveness, but it's also about strength for the journey. It's about his faithfulness to help you be faithful. And so if you need his faithfulness today, if you need help to be faithful today, come to the table. We're going to remember the love and grace and mercy and sacrifice of our God as people who wait. So take a minute. Spend some time with the Lord, and when you're ready, come to the table, grab your elements, and hold on to them. We'll receive them together in just a moment. But when you're ready, come. The tables are open.